The Fan on Demand. Live from J Spring Training in Dunedin, Florida, this is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
We are back at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium, the Blue Jays and the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll be getting at it this afternoon. Ricky Romero scheduled the pitch for the Blue Jays, and Cliff Lee for the Philadelphia Phillies. We're very pleased at this time to be joined by the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Alex Anthopoulos. Alex, thanks so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here. This is a very interesting. I've never been in a spring training radio booth before. It's not nearly as swanky as the ones up in Toronto.
No, it's I guess the way to describe it is it's intimate.
It's true.
Intimate is nice. Just a very general question. First of all, I guess the big story today, as far as the Blue Jays are concerned, well, there's two, but one, Aaron Hill, playing in the field today, according to the lineup. I know originally there was some thought he might DH. That's obviously a good sign that he's going to be playing in the field.
Very good sign. We're going to be conservative more than anything else, and we were going to make sure to see how we felt today. And obviously he feels good enough to go. I think the plan is for him to get three at-bats, and we'll see how he feels. But we think he'll be ready for the start of the season. We just want to make sure we do take the right steps.
Because of what's happened with Aaron in the past, I mean, I'm thinking about his injury that I don't think he ever really recovered from the injury when he got out of spring training last year. I mean, he may have recovered, but I just think that his whole year was off kilter. Is there any concern about that at all? Or I know from talking to Tony LaCava and other people who've seen him take batting practice, they said he's actually, his swing looks better this year than it did last year. The ball sounds better coming off the bat.
No, I think it's a great point. We've had sim games here on the main field, and the ball does, it looks better coming off the bat too. It jumps off the bat a lot more. Again, I keep racking my brain, not specifically with Aaron, just with spring training performances. It's my sixth or seventh spring training here, and you get excited about guys, you don't get excited. But Aaron, with his performance, and you look at it, a down year, hitting 200, he still had 26 home runs. He's never hit 200 in his life, his entire minor league career, big league career. So we think he'll get back to hitting for a much higher average, and the power should certainly continue to be there.
What have you seen so far in spring training that has particularly impressed you? People are going to probably get tired of me saying this, but there really does seem to be a positive buzz around the team from the fans, from the anecdotally, from the email I'm getting, from the people I run into. Got more people talking about the Jays. There just seems to be this sense that there is a real forward. I don't want to get too new agey here, but there's like a forward momentum with the organization. And I think you made the point to me earlier. When you look at your team late in games in spring training this year, we were seeing at every position a young guy. We weren't seeing kind of a 34-year-old guy trying to get back into the majors. We were seeing ghosts, really good young guys. Like, I would think that has to be the thing that, beyond what the major league guys are, that really has to have stood out to you. Because not only did they played well. They looked good. They played well, didn't they?
No, it's certainly exciting. And just the athletes that we're starting to get into the organization. I'm a sucker for athletes. They're fun to watch. They can do things a lot of other players can't. And we put in a lot of time and dollars, and it really comes from ownership. The money that they allowed us to spend in Latin America, the money they allowed us to spend in the amateur draft. We obviously traded some very good big league players to get some highly touted prospects. So to see them on the field and see the tools and the athleticism, at the same time realizing they're not all going to pan out and they're not all going to be stars, but certainly the ingredients are there. It's very exciting for us. And there's definitely a momentum to this organization, and we saw it at the winter tour when we went to the West Coast. And we find even now in spring training, the fans have been great. Obviously, coming off an 85-win season, everyone expected, everyone was talking doom and gloom. So I think that certainly helps. But at the same time, we feel like everything that we've done, we've really stuck to our plan. And we've had to take some steps back in terms of short term for the long term. But I think we've done a fairly good job of communicating that. Not that everyone's going to agree, but I think everyone realizes and understands why we're doing it, and that's why it's been easier to get them on board.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us from Florida Auto Exchange Stadium on the Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Is there any update on Frank Francisco yet? I know it's early.
It is early. He actually had a connecting flight to see Dr. Andrews, so they missed a connecting flight. So now they're only going to get in at 10:30. So by the time you get in, you get examined, you talk to him, I would assume by the end of the game, we'll certainly have word one way or the other. We're not expecting any news. We just expect to get Frankie some peace of mind. But it's certainly important so he doesn't have anything to worry about. He knows that we've dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, and he can move forward.
I mean, I know I asked you this via email, but I've got a couple of people who sent it in as well. I mean, people think of Mike Soroka. Anytime newly acquired pitcher has, quote-unquote, any type of arm problem, or in this case it's a pectoral problem, I guess, be the right way to put it. I mean, you did your due diligence on that. There's no concern, because as I said, I know people have been asking me, there's no concern about damaged goods or anything like that.
No, and I understand it. Look, it's very fair. You look at a player that we just acquired in trade. He did pitch in the spring, and I think he made two appearances for us, was up to 93, felt good all spring. We changed his routine a little bit when he got here. We increased his range of motion. So, you know, there certainly could be a component of us changing his routine a little bit, that his body's had to adjust to that. So, no, there's no concern at all. It's part of it. Guys go down in spring training all the time. It's not something that we want to see. But I have no concerns with my dealings with John Daniels or the Rangers at all. Especially, you know, as GMs, You have to be careful, because you know that you have only 29 guys to deal with. And look, from my standpoint, Mike Napoli's got 2 years of control. Frank Francisco has 1 year of control. And neither myself or John Daniels are going to put our reputations on the line for, you know, you wouldn't do it either way. But
Right. Really
the magnitude of this trade, not to diminish what we think Frankie can be. This isn't a franchise-changing trade or someone that we can have for the next 10 years. He's under a one-year deal. So we did our homework. You know, we know he had been banged up in the past. And we know that the MRI is clean and he's been fine for us. We just need to get him through it.
What have you been able to determine? And I know it's we're almost at the end of spring training now, but what have you been able to determine about John Farrell from what you've seen in spring training? And I know you did. The research on him was exhaustive. But I've got to think that when you actually see a guy work with the guys individually, or actually interact with them in person and see him, how he runs a game and how he gets guys involved, you do learn something about him. What have you learned about him so far?
Well, you know, it's I feel like I'm learning about him each day, and you learn more about the day-to-day interactions because, you know, in the off-season, well, you're talking about putting the team together. Now in spring training, we're still putting the team together, but we're still talking about what we're seeing on the field, and we get to talk baseball a little bit more. And yeah, there's no question it was an exhaustive search, and I remember talking to Terry Ryan, the former Minnesota Twins GM, just asking him about some advice before we made a hire. And, you know, he really stressed to me, hey, make sure you do your homework. You don't want to have to go through it again. And after having gone through it, I don't want to go through it again. Mm-hmm. Because it's that that exhausting, I guess, in so many ways. But John is as thorough as they come. He commands the respect of the players. He's very secure in himself. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, first year on the job, there's a saying that says, well, when you have to tell everyone you're the boss, you're not the boss. And John doesn't have that. He doesn't need to stick out his chest and I'm the manager and this is how I'm going to do things. He's been around, his background, and we work very well together. And there's certainly, like anything, there's going to be growing pains over the course of the season and the years after that. But so far, everything's been outstanding, and I feel even better about the hire.
For the most part, I think the team has probably fallen in place. I know that Edwin Encarnacion, looking forward to seeing him at third base. Everybody who's seen him play at first base, guys from your organization, other scouts, have been, they talk about, it's almost as if that should have been his position. I had one scout tell me, "How the hell was this guy not playing first base like, whatever, 3 or 4 years ago? He looks very good there." So I think the positions have probably filled themselves out. I guess your real battle right now, or the real spots that are open, are those three pitchers going for the two spots in the rotation: Lich,
Reyes,
and Drabek.
No, it is, and that's one that I thought about it on the drive in. I thought about it. That's probably the one battle that's consuming me right now, and there's still some battles in the bullpen, but knowing, does Frankie start the year on the DL? Can we get him back in time to go back-to-back days and all those things? Does Octavio Dotel start the year on the DL with the hamstring? We think he'll be okay, but we're starting to get close. So some of the battles in the bullpen might settle themselves where everyone makes the team, but the rotation battle is a tough one, because obviously you have a guy like Kyle who's incredibly highly touted, has great stuff. You know, did everything we asked him to do last year in the minor leagues. You have a guy in Lich who's been has won 13 games for us before. A few years ago, was our number two starter mm-hmm. to start the year, and he just had a wonderful start last time out. And J.P. Arencibia did a great job with him. And then you get a guy like JoJo Reyes, who is out of options and is 26 years old, left-handed. 2 years of service, so you have his rights for the next four. And there's upside to him as a left-handed starter as well. So, you know, JoJo with the added options makes it a little more challenging. But that's why it's really going down to the wire start to start.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. When you watch those guys pitch, how do you watch them compared to Romero or Moro, guys that you know are going to be on the staff? Do you watch their games differently than a Drabeck or a Reyes or a Lich, guys who are battling for spot?
I think when you watch someone pitch, you watch the same things, but you're probably bearing down a little bit more. You're probably really trying to put them under the microscope a little bit more, whereas if a Brett Cecil goes out in New York and he doesn't throw well, you chalk it up, hey, it's a bad outing, you know, what he did last year for us. With a guy like JoJo, his issue's always been getting the ball up in the zone. When he's down in the zone and he's showing good secondary stuff, changeup, obviously the slider and the curveball, those are the things you look for. With Kyle, to see him be calm on the mound, continue to use his changeup and try to be down in the zone. And with a guy like Lich, just to be able to have his command. If he's throwing strikes like he did the other day and he works quick and he's got a good tempo and he induces contact, he's as good as anybody we have, though it's not big stuff, mm-hmm. and it may not look as dominant as Brandon Morrow. The numbers that he's had when he's been a starter, he's had mid-3 to high-3 RAs for us.
And I think when people talk about looking to replace Sean Markham, if Jesse Lich is healthy, there's no reason right there that you don't replace Sean Markham's, maybe not the sort of the Sean Markham performance, but you might be able to replace some of the statistics.
Sure.
Sean Markham, if Jesse Lich is healthy.
I think that's very fair, and I think, again, they're not the same guy. Styles are totally different. You know, Sean's more of a, you know, he's got the great one of the great right-handed changeups in the game. But I think that the win totals, push come to shove, with both guys, they work quick, they throw strikes, and the win totals for both guys could end up being the same thing if Lich is back to the guy he was. So he's shown it for us two years in a row in 07 and 08. The type of seasons that he can have for us, and he's only 26, and his stuff is starting to really come back to what it was. So those are all things you're trying to weigh, and you're trying to be fair to everybody, and that's really going to be a tough battle for us and a tough choice.
We'll be back with more with Alex Anthopoulos, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. I will get to your emails, Jeff Blair at fan590.com. That ahead in the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show, live from Florida, on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. I met you on somebody's island.
You thought you had known me before. Gotta upgrade the music, that's the only thing I'm getting on them. You'd think the ratings were so good, you'd think I'd be able to get Marley or something played. They got, what is this, Jungle Love? I mean, that's back in our day. I'm talking to Mel Roman and the Jays, PR director. Media guy. I don't know what your title is now. Media relations guru. One of the gurus. This is like back in our day. Anyhow.
We had guys like Ron Sandelli and Mike Shaw that wanted to come up here. They wanted me to drop their name in, so.
Yeah, that's okay. Ron Sandelli, the coach, and Mike Shaw, who,
they're up there in the office now. They're probably howling excited.
I want to get Shaw on, because this is a guy, basically, people don't know what the traveling secretary does. It's a guy that basically gets the team from point A to point B on the road. And he's got to have better stories than anybody.
Absolutely.
He's got to have better stories. I mean, he knows who needs the quiet room. You know, he knows who needs...
Who needs the PlayStation, the big screen TVs.
Who needs the PlayStation, exactly.
Fans would be really surprised at some of the requests players have when we get into a city.
That would be kind of... I remember talking to the Expos traveling secretary one time about Tommy Harper was the hardest guy because Tommy Harper needed a corner room. He needed a corner room. He just did. He had to have a corner room. So you had to, give Tommy Harper a corner room. Anyhow, we're going to get your emails. As I said, Jeff Blair at fan590.com. We are at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium with Toronto Blue Jays general manager Alex Anthopoulos. Jays and Phillies playing today. Ricky Romero against Cliff Lee. Jeff McCarroll wants to know. I love this question, Alex. I, like a lot of people, feel that Brett Laurie has earned a spot with the Jays. I've heard some rumors about disputes between yourself and John Farrell about whether he should come up or not. Can you clear up this issue for us? And I'm assuming that he likely won't come up until Juan Rivera is traded, correct? Thank you.
Well, I'd love to be able to answer that exactly the way it's been written, but it would end up blowing up in my face. But
yeah.
No, more specifically, Brett's had a very good camp. He's playing very well. There's a reason he's still here. Because he's played as well as he has, and he's opened up a lot of eyes. When we acquired him, we knew he was very talented, but we didn't know what exactly we were getting until we finally got a chance to see him on a day-in and day-out basis. And though we felt the asking price was steep and we gave up a lot for him, he's probably better than we had hoped for at this stage so far. With respect to myself and John, zero disputes, zero problems. I guess for the people that don't know me that well, no matter what we talk about in our meetings, whether it's with our amateur scouts or professional scouts or player development staff and our big league staff, I start every meeting off by saying I want everybody to speak freely. There are no bad points, good points, because I've been in meetings before over the last 10 years or so. I've been in the game where things are said and then someone walks out of the room and we'll criticize what someone said. We're so wrong in this game, whether it's when we draft someone, whether we make a trade, whether we start the season with certain players, that there are no right or wrong answers. I like getting everyone's opinion, and I want the truth. I don't want people to be swayed by what the GM says, and the same way with our coaches, I don't want them to be swayed by what the manager says. So at the end of the day, John and I make the final determination, and we work together on everything, and our relationship's been outstanding, and I love the fact that John knows he can speak freely with me, and I know I can speak freely with him as well. So are we into this dispute? Not at all. We're on the same page, but we have good baseball talks all the time about a lot of things. I ask him about trades, I ask him about all kinds of stuff.
And just, I know people will also bring this up as well, but the whole question of service time, which rises anytime you have a prospect. I mean, I'm one of those people, I see the argument for guarding a guy's service time, but at the same time, if a guy makes the team, aren't you almost obligated to, you know, to honor the guy for
sure.
making the team?
I completely agree.
Is it an issue with Brett?
No, and it's not. It's not. And like, I guess I can answer this both ways.
Sure.
One, no GM will ever tell you the opposite. But I guess what I can say is, you know, if reading between the lines is, we're working so hard to build a culture here of trust amongst the players, of being a first-class organization. We're trying to find an edge over the other 29 teams any way we can. And that means if we could travel a little bit better than all the other teams, if we can have our clubhouse a little bit better than all the other teams, if we have better lines of communication than all the other teams, and if we treat players the right way, and players know if they're not being treated the right way. Agents know if they're not being treated the right way. So if someone has a great spring and the person that they're competing with has had a terrible spring, and it's clear that developmentally they're ready with all those things, and it's very, very obvious who should be on the team, we have to look ourselves in the mirror, and we have to say, are we holding up our end of the bargain of everything that we say we're going to be about as an organization? Now, you could say the same thing with, you know, some of the starters we have, with Kyle Drabek and Lich and so on, and JoJo Reyes. These guys are all right in the mix. Whether you want to look at stuff or you want to look at stats, they've all performed really, really well. Brett's played well. Juan Rivera swung the bat very well. He's had a good track record before in the past. Obviously, he's under contract for $5 million. Those are all things that have to be factored in. And also, as well, with the out-of-options component, we're here to have a team that is built for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And things can change quickly. We started last season with Dana Evelyn, Merkin Valdez, and Jeremy Accardo. Just because we broke spring training with those guys didn't mean that they were going to stick the entire year. And soon, within 2 or 3 weeks, we had already made changes. So I know we all look to the first as a big date, and it is, but it doesn't mean it can't change the following day.
Alex, Eaton Hess has a question, a very general question regarding international scouting. I like this. How is it done? Got an hour.
Sure.
Is it a priority for the organization, and do the Jays focus on Latin America alone, or are you now starting to scout more in Asia?
Great question. I am long-winded, so I will try to keep them short so you can get to more of these. There's a lot. Basically, international scouting, you go into a country and see a player. You have the ability to sign them right there on the spot. If they're of age and there's a date, they have to turn 16 by their first season, and I won't get into too much of that, but assuming that a player is eligible to sign, I can fly down to the Dominican, we can work a player out and sign him right then and there if they were willing to agree the terms. In terms of the importance for us, very, very important. It's another way to continue to get assets for the organization, either to come up to Toronto or to use those players in trades and to continue to build a talent base. Marco Patti does a great job. Tony LaCava is very involved in it as well. He's actually in Venezuela and coming back today. I just was in the Dominican a few weeks ago, and I just went over to Orlando to see another the Dominican prospect team play. So it's an opportunity for us to continue to add talent, and there really is no opportunity cost other than dollars, which is a factor. But again, we're sitting there in the draft. There's only so many people you could take in the first round and so many picks you have, and the players will fall off the board. In Latin America, it's not a choice of I'm going to take that guy or that guy. there's only so many players available, and if you have the dollars to spend, you can bring that talent into the organization.
Philosophically, how do you feel about a worldwide amateur draft, which often gets talked about? And I know that, I mean, it depends on the general manager, but I like the idea, but I'm always surprised how many general managers say, you know what, there's a lot more involved in it than you guys think.
I've gone back and forth, and if I worked for some other club, my mindset might be totally different, but as the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, I'd rather not have a worldwide draft. I think that's a place for us to get an edge and to get an advantage if we have the best scouts. I think not every team maybe devotes the same amount of time and resources to Latin America, and that's a place for us to have an advantage and go out and compete, and it's important, especially in the AL East. So, but I can also understand the merits of having it for parity across the game and for the 30 teams. The tough part is, like we always say, it's like the Wild Wild West down there. Birth dates, you know, finding out about players, things like that. There's a lot that goes on, and it's probably the really tough thing to regulate.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. From Florida Auto Exchange Stadium, the Blue Jays taking batting practice right now before their game against the Philadelphia Phillies this afternoon. A lot of talk, Alex, as you well know, about J.P. Arencibia. Brian Murphy wants to know, do you think Arencibia regrets the high standard he set for himself in his spectacular debut, which I think is partly tongue-in-cheek, but also there's some concern from the fans about his spring batting average. And I know spring numbers aren't, well, spring numbers are spring numbers, but a lot of concern, I think, from fans about J.P. Arencibia.
Sure, and that's, I guess you can look at it two ways. You could say, well, it's only spring. And the biggest thing for me is I think the quality of his at-bats have been good. I think he's up there in terms of, if you're going to look at any stats, the quality of at-bats have been good, and I say that because he's walked quite a bit, at least at a higher amount than some of the other guys on the team. And J.P. historically is not a guy that's going to be a great on-base guy. Obviously, he has a lot of power, and he's got a very good swing. But J.P.'s someone that's really focused on game calling, defensively, doing all those things behind the plate, and that's something that's our number one priority. And I've told him that in the offseason. John Farrell has too, and he knows the importance of it to the organization and to those starters, and that's part of the appeal for us of John Buck and Jose Molina last year. Just for two examples, I remember Alex Gonzalez and John Buck both did not look good last spring training. John Buck got out of the gate slowly the first month, and then he finally got it going. Alex Gonzalez got on fire as soon as the bell rung, and he did well. So I don't make too much into spring training stats. I think overall JP's look good. The quality of his at-bats have been good. We're going to stick with him. We're going to let it ride it out and just hope that he continues to be great behind the plate in terms of defensively and his game calling.
Ken, as it looks, or as it stands right now, I mean, I think probably Jose Molina and Brandon Morrow would be a pair. There's some talk about Molina and Drabek. That's two out of your three starters working with a guy who is, well, I'm going to be nice, limited offensively, I guess. Is that an issue?
I know there's been talk about that because Jose caught Kyle in the last game, but you're going to see JP catch Brandon Morrow. So
okay.
Obviously Kyle hasn't made the team yet. There is the thought that if Kyle was to make the team because he's young, would there be a benefit to him to have someone like Jose to get him through if we were to decide to go with Kyle in one of those starter spots? And there's definitely been a lot of talk about it because a guy like Brandon, the same way, just learning how to call his game. The other guys have been around a long time. They know what they want to do. But even with respect to Brandon Morrow, we've talked a little bit more about trying to get JP back there. I thought Brandon, with that game that was on Sportsnet, JP was behind the plate, I thought he did a really good job. And there's no question now with a year of Jose and Brandon, Brandon's comfortable with Jose because he doesn't even need to shake or even think about what to throw. Jose and him are so much on the same page. But Brandon feels good with JP as well. So Jose Molina's made his career and his name off being a great game caller and guys loving to throw to him the same way Sal Fasano did. And that's just to be expected. But it's something that over the long haul, we think JP is going to end up being the guy. And if you can continue to learn from a guy like Jose Molina, there's a lot of value to that for us as well.
What do you expect? I just got to change the focus a little bit to today's starter, to Ricky Romero. How good can Ricky be?
I think, you know, for us, we think he has the ability to be a number two starter. And everyone says, well, why wouldn't you say he can be a one? You know, just because there's how many ones are there in the league? You know, maybe five, six, five or six. And part of being a one is being dominant year after year after year and rolling off five, 6 years in a row of being able to do it. So it's too early. I will never anoint anybody a one type starter until they've done it for a while, because a lot of guys have one type stuff, but it's being able to do it year in and year out. But his work ethic is off the charts. I was just telling an agent the other day about Romero and the contract that we did with him. No matter what happens with him, performance, health, those are all things that are out of your control. I don't worry about him one bit. He's one of the hardest working guys on the team. He's incredibly competitive. He's a great teammate. He's got great stuff. He's up to 94 with sinks. He's got a plus slider, plus curveball, plus changeup. He has everything that you look for. He's the whole package, and he's proud to be a Toronto Blue Jay and proud to be part of the organization. And he's a great, really cornerstone for us, for all the young arms that are coming into camp and are going to be part of this.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Fergus has a good question here, Alex. Now that you have more experience as a GM, do you regret not going higher with your bid for Aroldis Chapman?
No, because, I mean, I always talk about I regretted, you know, the whole process from my standpoint of we just didn't have enough information. And it's not an excuse. That's what I regretted, the fact that we didn't have it. So I'm not one to just say, well, we didn't have enough information. Too bad. We'll get him the next time. Well, we got to fix it. We got to make sure that we're more prepared. And I think that's it really changed when we went after Adeniyi Echevarria last year. We were there for 2 days. We worked him through everything. You know, with Aroldis, I had one bullpen on New Year's Eve, 2 days before I'm getting married, and it just, you know, yeah. he was, you know, he touched 96, but didn't really throw his slider, didn't really throw his changeup, and we had seen, our scouts had seen a bullpen a few weeks earlier, and they really liked what they saw, and ultimately, you know, when I look back now, there's no question for what he's done. He'd be great to have as part of the organization, but when I, you know, to be honest with myself, when I look back the mechanics of the contract with, one, he can opt into salary arbitration, which we would have done, and it was part of something that we had put in there. But with the other concerns of the way his signing bonus was structured, and if he opts into arbitration, they can convert the entire signing, they can convert the entire $30 million over 6 years into a signing bonus. So he could ultimately make $30 million by the time he gets to salary arbitration, then you're paying him for the other 3 years.
Wow.
It could become a $40, $50, $60 million, which, look, I guess you want that to happen because that means he's doing very, very well. But knowing myself at the time, I don't know that I would have been comfortable doing all those things, because I'm a big contract precedent guy, and once you go down a certain path, you're done. And that's the same thing with no trades and award bonuses and performance bonuses. And there's no question at times you're going to have to do some of those things. But with where it went, would we ultimately have put it over the top with some of the other things that need to be put in the contract? Probably not, but at $30 million over six, now seeing what he's done, I'd be glad to have him at that price.
Alex, we'll be back after we take a break with Alex Anthopoulos. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show, live from Florida, on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
We're back at Florida Auto Exchange Stadium, Jays and Phillies, this afternoon. Ricky Romero and Cliff Lee. We are very pleased to be joined for another segment by General Manager Alex Anthopoulos. Alex, again, thank you so much for doing this. I know it's a huge chunk of time in spring training. We're taking your emails, Jeff Blair at fan590.com. Tim Weifinkel, I hope I pronounced the name right. Hey, Alex and Jeff, looking at the Blue Jays' depth in the outfield, what do you think the Blue Jays are envisioning to do long term? It seems to me that the veteran outfielders, Davis, Rivera, Podsednik, and Bautista, are within a year or two of being pushed out by the young gun Snyder, Thames, Ghost, Mastriani, and Sierra. And you also have a question about third baseman Sean Uchinko has an impressive 600 at-bats at Abel. I don't know what that means. Where does he fit in with Laurie looking to take over long-term? I guess the question about the outfielders, though, how close are, in particular, guys like Thames and Ghost and
sure.
Sierra, for that matter?
Hard to say. They're going to be in, well, Eric Thames is going to be in Las Vegas. Anthony Ghost will be in New Hampshire. And even with respect to Anthony Ghost, he's only 20 years old, and we're debating whether we should start him in Dunedin again, but he's looked good enough in camp, and he's made some strides, and we think our hitting coach there in Double-A has really struck up a great relationship with him, and he's made some swing changes, and we think he'll be okay in New Hampshire. But again, these guys are 20 years old, and there's such a long growth curve with these guys. One, they have to continue to go through the minor leagues, then they have to get up to the big leagues, and then it may take 2 or 3 years before they stick. I mean, this is Travis Snyder's fourth year of, you know, at least being exposed to the major leagues, and we think this is finally the year that he's going to stick and click. So it just goes to show you how much time it takes. So long term, there's no question We have Jose Bautista under contract for a long time. We think he'll be a long, you know, long-term guy in right field. Travis, we think, will be a long-term player in left field. And we have Davis for 2 years with an option for a third. And we don't know how Raji is going to play, but we're very excited. We think he's going to be a lot better than he was last year in our environment on the turf. And with respect to Anthony Gose, we think he's going to have a great career as well, but he still has to perform in New Hampshire, then Las Vegas, then hopefully potentially get up here. And is he going to stick, or is it 2 or 3 years of going up and down as well?
He really made an impact in his short time here, didn't he? Just in terms of how he dealt with you and John Farrell and the players. Like I only saw him. I saw him play a couple of games, but I kind of saw the way he was around the clubhouse. He's
a great kid.
He really, I mean, you know, everybody says they're great kids, but this guy really does seem to have something, almost like Darno. There's something going on there.
It's
beyond just baseball.
It's a great point. It's a great point. And it's, ironically enough, both him and Darno are our best friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they live together, and they're best friends. And they both have, I guess you want to call it the it. They just have that little bit of swagger. It's not arrogance. They just have that confidence to them and that little bit of a swagger, which we like to see. And you can't manufacture just the way they are. They love the game. They work tremendously hard. I remember, was it a week ago? It was Sunday, and I walked into the lunchroom in the morning. They were eating breakfast. And, you know, normally GM walks in there, and normally Sunday, for the most part, a lot of times has been a day where we make some cuts. And they look at me like, and I said, well, don't have to put your hand in front of your eye. You guys are still alive. And they started to laugh, and we joked around. I said, if Mike Shaw doesn't give you your meal money today, then you should start getting worried about it. And they both laughed. And I was talking with Anthony, and he was just telling me how much he enjoyed the experience and what he was getting out of it. And, you know, Travis, the same way. They've both been great. And we're very excited about them, but at the same time, I realize there's still a ton of development to both players.
And Brett Wallace has had a pretty good spring for Houston, hasn't he?
I think so. I know that we've had some guys, you know, obviously that see the Astros and everybody else. I think he got off to a bit of a slower start, and now he's swinging the bat well. And we think Brett's going to hit. And I'm hopeful that every trade that we make, that the players work out on both sides, because ultimately that GM's going to come back to me and want to keep making trades. And I want to be known as someone that makes fair trades. So when a trade needs to be made, people are very comfortable calling me. So I hope Brett has a long and great career. He's a great worker and a great kid as well. And I think it's a good fit for both teams. They had Michael Bourne in center field. We had Vernon, and we didn't have too many young impact center fielders that were on the rise. And hopefully it's a trade that works out for both teams. We won't know for another 5 or 6 years, but I think it will work out for both teams.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Is Adam Lind now, can we just call him a first baseman? Is straightforward, he's a first baseman?
I think so. I mean, we were talking about it the other day. I don't worry about him at first base. I think he's going to be average defensively at first base, and I may change my opinion at the end of the season with more reps just off of a spring training look and the strides that he's made. So, you know, I wouldn't sit here and say he's going to be a gold glove first baseman, and they're few and far between. But I don't think it'll be to the point that we look at Adam Lind and we can't prepare for him being our first baseman going forward for the long term. And we'll know for certain once the season starts and we get 6 months and really get to see him on a day-to-day basis. But right now, he looks good. It looks very comfortable. And that's huge for us as an organization, because that means that opens up the DH spot for us long-term. And we can be opportunistic when the Jim Tomys are available or the Vlad Guerreros are available, or even there's another third baseman or outfielder. Mm-hmm. Having DH available allows you to acquire any bat that you want to acquire and always have a spot for him.
And that ultimately, I know we talked about this earlier in the offseason, the one thing that does do with the DH position, and I know other teams have done this as well, It allows you almost to address a specific need with your lineup, doesn't it? In other words, if you've got a lineup that you're happy with, but you need a little more pop against left-handed pitching, boom, you go out and get that guy. It allows you to almost address that one area.
Sure.
You know, that you may need to round out the team, as opposed to some teams, you know, just spending a lot of money on the DH as a position. It's almost more of a strategic use of the position.
Sure.
As opposed to just getting a guy in.
Well, the other thing, too, is even from a value standpoint, contractually speaking, DHs don't make a lot of money because they're DHs and they can't play other positions. And their market is limited to the American League teams. And some American League teams already have a DH. And some clubs philosophically want someone to be able to play more than one position and not be really limited to the DH. So that's something that's advantageous to us as well, that we can get pretty good bat, the production of a bat, at what we feel would be an affordable price. And especially if Adam can take the first base and continue to develop that way, you look at what first basemen are making in the game today, the elite ones, Adrian Gonzalez, if he ends up signing his contract, Ryan Howard, and obviously these guys are, you know, tremendous players. Some of them are gold glovers. But still, the elite first basemen get a lot of money. And if we can get good production out of first from Adam and then be able to add a big bat at DH long term, we think we're going to be much healthier as an organization.
Marshall Gillard has a question, just a straightforward question for Alex. Who do you feel is your biggest competition in the AL East this season? Why?
The best team in the division on paper is the Boston Red Sox. So you're going into every season wanting to win the AL East. So I believe it's not to disrespect the others, but on paper right now, I think everybody would agree that on paper the Boston Red Sox certainly look like the best team in the East, and arguably the best team in the AL, and even further to that point, the best team in the entire game.
Mm-hmm. I know you don't want to talk about another team, but one of the concerns people have in this area, the Tampa Bay Rays. A lot of people expect a fall-off. I'm one of those. I wouldn't surprise me, frankly, to see the Rays finish fourth in this division. I'm not going to ask you about that. But, I mean, you and Paul Beeston have both made a point, and this is not to denigrate the Rays at all, but you've made this point consistently, and I think maybe this year we'll see why, that when you get this organization where you want it to be, you want to have almost an assembly line of players so that you're keeping your window of opportunity open beyond 1 or 2 years, so you don't have to go through a massive rebuild every 3 years or address a crucial need every 3 years. And I think maybe what we're seeing with Tampa this year, if that happens, that almost just supports your philosophy in that regard, doesn't it?
Sure. And
that's not meant to be critical of Tampa or their management.
And I've even talked to Tampa about this as well, because I use them as an example. And you know, I think we're not saying anything that no one realizes. It's clear they've won the American League East 2 out of the last 3 years. They've been to the World Series. And they've basically maxed out in terms of attendance. I think it was 2 million fans or so. Their upside as a market has, they've proven the fact that I don't think they could have had more success than they've had in this division, and they've proven the upside. And with that, it was a $75 or $76 million payroll, and I think they lost money last year, and that was their upside. Our upside is significantly greater. One, with the health of our ownership group, the market, just Toronto, 7.5 million people in the greater Toronto area. Then you talk about Canada with 30. Our payroll's been close to $100 million before a few years ago, and there's still so much more upside with our attendance. So when you start factoring all that in, if we had the success that Tampa's had the last few years, I think we would have been at 3 million fans very easily. And then we're not forced to look at, well, we have to let Carl Crawford walk away. We have to trade Matt Garza. We have to let Carlos Peña walk away. We'd be in a position to be able to sign those players and certainly extend those players because we have the resources and the upside to our market. The big key is putting ourselves in a position from a foundation standpoint that we're as healthy as we can be. We have as much talent coming up, and we have it time together. And really become an elite team at the same time with players that are going to be under control and be together for an extended period.
Alex Anthopoulos joins us from Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. What right now would be your concern with this team if today was opening day, aside from Frank Francisco's health? What would be your concern right now?
I have a lot of them, and it's not to say I don't like our team, but I have concerns because it's young. And whenever it's young, I don't know what we're going to get. I feel like with Romero, we know what we're going to get because now it's 2 years in a row. Brett Cecil, certainly we know his ability to lead our team in wins, but he only did it 1 year, so we need to see it again. Okay. Brandon Morrow made great strides, but again, we need to see it. We think Rajay Davis is going to be better. We think Edwin Encarnacion is going to be better. We think certainly Yunel Escobar will be better than what he showed last year, and he was good, but he can be that much better. So J.J. Pierron, CB the same way. There's a lot of upside to all of our players, but because they haven't done it 4 or 5 years in a row, I won't be surprised if one of those players does not perform the way we hope for, because that's just the way the game is, the same way that I wouldn't have told you that Hill and Lind, I expected them to have the season that they had last year. So until you get to the point that you have players that have done it year in and year out, you're always going to maybe be a little bit concerned because there is that element of the unknown. But at the same time, our team can go a lot of ways. If everyone clicks and everyone stays healthy, I won't be shocked if they all have great years because they have the ability to do it.
Jose Bautista, I had a chance to talk to him a couple of days ago just about his spring and his approach. And I think a lot of people, and I mean those of us who were around Jose a little bit, I don't think any of us thought that the second after he signed his contract he was going to put on 40 pounds and show up out of shape.
Sure.
I don't think we expected that. But I really do get the sense that there are a lot of guys who get a big contract and you talk to them and you get the sense that something's changed. And it just almost a human nature thing. And he, honest to God, he seems like the same guy he was 3 years ago when he was fighting for a position. If anything, he looks a little more, even a little more focused. And he's had a great spring. He's taken great BP, and he's looked really good. Have you had a chance after you got that contract done? Did you have any time where you just kind of sat down and said to yourself, "Did I really do the right thing?" Like, have you had any second thoughts about it? Or
I think you always, no matter what you do. I remember after we signed Rajay Davis, as much as we liked him, we liked the upside, we think he'd be a really good player. I don't know that I've ever done a contract that I've ever not reflected and look. And I do that all the time by nature with everything. Whether it's you hire someone, you make a trade, you claim someone on waivers, I do that to a fault, to be honest with you. So, have I thought about it? Certainly, but not any more than anything else. And I guess at the end of the day with Jose, I know the ability's there. I know the work ethic is there. I think he's in better shape this season than last, and he's always been in good shape. The qualities of his at-bats are still great. The eye at the plate is certainly there, and the power and everything else is there as well. So I don't worry about it because I know what he means to this organization. But just like anything else, I'm going to constantly reflect on everything that we do. And sometimes I think it helps because we can find a way to get better. On the other times, I think I beat myself up over things too much, and it's not a very healthy way to live. But it's just the way I'm wired.
How's fatherhood treating you? To get personal here. How's,
sure. Oh,
how's
yeah, I don't
father,
mind.
How's fatherhood treating you?
It's great.
How old's the...
She's going to be 6 months in 2 days. So she's born September 24th, so she'll be coming on 6 months. And my wife obviously takes care of our daughter all the time. And I say it all the time, as hard as we think our jobs are, and I know I have a great job and it's a great opportunity, but there's obviously things that you stress about and things like that, but their jobs are so much harder. And every male will say that about their wife to make them feel better. But the reality of it is such a tough job to take care of a child. And I had my daughter last night for about an hour and a half, and it was just exhausting. Mm-hmm. It was just, she was crying. I had to move in one room, move in the other, get her to walk, sit her down, put her up, give her water. And it just, you never get a breather. But obviously the best feeling is that when I come home, and even though she's only 6 months, and then she'll look at me and smile and laugh, and what an amazing feeling. And that's the greatest part.
Has it allowed you to think to maybe gear down a little bit? Because you're a very focused guy, and you're a work, people describe you as a workaholic. Has this allowed you to maybe slow down a little bit?
I think so. I think it has a little bit. I know I have to balance my time a little bit more. As crazy as this sounds, sometimes I feel like I lose my edge a little bit. I don't want to say I'm just got am I working hard enough? Because I know the other GMs in this division, if I'm not doing something, they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that all those guys, I talk to them on the phone. They work hard. They're real smart. And I have to constantly try to stay a step ahead or keep on my toes. So I find I'm getting a lot more balance, and whenever I start to stress about things, you hear athletes say this all the time, it's nice to just put it into perspective, knowing you have your family and that's truly what's important to you. But I do think that balance has certainly been a big part of it, and when you have a family, it's important. And my wife's great too, because she doesn't care about baseball, she doesn't care about sports. She just loves me and wants to make sure I stay healthy. And whether I do this job for a year or 20 years, she just wants to make sure that my head's in the right place and that our family continues to come first.
Alex, listen, I really appreciate this. As I said, I know an hour out of a general manager's day in spring training is a lot, but I know that a lot of fans enjoyed hearing from you, and thanks very much for doing this.
Sure, glad to do it.
Take care. That is Alex Anthopoulos, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll be back to Florida Auto Exchange Stadium. More of the Jeff Blair Show ahead on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.